All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today is my rapid reaction to the Falcons' 28-14 loss to the Kansas City Chiefs in week two of the 2018 preseason.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me, I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years over at FalFans.com. You can find me on Twitter at FalFans, and of course, I'm the host of the Locked On Falcons podcast, this illustrious podcast that you're listening to right now. And today we're doing the rapid reaction on a special Saturday following the Falcons' second preseason loss, this time to the Kansas City Chiefs, at home in Mercedes-Benz Stadium, 28-14. Starters got off to a good start early in the game. Backups came in and ruined it all. All the momentum, if you care about wins and losses, then this, that's what you care about. I think the starters were impressive. They looked sharper. I'm not going to be that person that's going to be like, this means something about what the Falcons are poised to do during the regular season, but it was nice to see the starters perform better. Certainly some individuals stood out, and we'll talk about those guys on today's podcast, as I did a week ago in the rapid reaction to the Falcons' loss against the Jets in the preseason opener. We're going to go position by position, and I'll talk about the various players that I have positive, negative, and or neutral thoughts on. And we'll come back on Monday and give maybe some further in-depth look at this game when I rewatch it on Saturday. As you guys are listening to this, I'm probably sitting there in, you know, neck deep in fourth quarter Falcons preseason action. So that's the plan on today's episode. So let's get right into it. Starting with the quarterback position, Matt Ryan looked really solid, showcased that off-structure movement ability that we talked about on Thursday's podcast. He stepped up in the pocket, delivered a nice throw to Austin Hooper late on a third down that resulted in a big 29-yard play that really sort of kicked the offense into gear, and then thereafter you saw things happening for the offense, and they wound up ending that drive with a score. Matt Schaub came in after, I think on the third series with the second string unit, did some nice stuff, you know, was managing the game, made some nice throws, some nice reads as well. Kurt Benkert, much to my surprise, came in the third quarter and played pretty much the rest of the game. I think he made a couple of nice throws, particularly early on, but it seemed as the game wore on, he became less and less on target with many of his throws, and certainly was not as impressive a performance as we saw a week ago against the Jets. Garrett Grayson got thrown to the wolves by the Falcons in the final 2 minutes of the game. I don't get the Falcons coaching staff's decision to throw him and other guys like Terrence McGee in the game at the very end. That sort of left a bitter taste in my mouth at the end of the game, not because of the Falcons lost or anything. I just felt like, you know, the time for some of the fourth string guys like that to go into the game was probably when there was 10 minutes left in the game after Binkert threw a pick six due to pressure. Not necessarily, you know, he had a Selesi Uhatefi was in his lap on a bull rush, and so he missed Justin Crawford on a throw and it wound up being picked off. But I think once you decided to keep Binkert in after that point, after that pick six with about 10 minutes left in the game, after that point, why not have him finish the game? I just felt like throwing Grayson and some of these other guys out there after they had been sitting on the sideline and standing on the sideline for 3 hours and then basically saying, hey, go out there with the 2 minute drill and, you know, do something to impress us. I just think it was sort of not cool in the Falcons coaching staff. And I know, like, I'm sitting here nitpicking about a meaningless preseason game, and I know everybody else is going to be talking about how amazing the Falcons offense was, and that's going to be their big takeaways from this game. But I don't know, that just sort of felt like it was weird. I think I'm also a little bit feisty tonight just because I was actually paying a little bit more attention to Twitter during the game and than I did a week ago, and just a lot of bad preseason takes sort of, I'm like, wow, okay, I just need to go back into my bubble and just watch the game by myself and not really focus too much on what other people were saying on Twitter, just because it was just a lot of bad stuff. But those the most of the negative things I want to say about the game. We'll get into some more positive stuff, at least in terms of talking about players moving ahead. But it just, you know, at that point, it just felt like, why put those guys into a bad situation? I don't know. I just didn't think that was a great coaching decision. But, you know, that's part of my reason why I don't put too much stock in preseason, just because I think you wouldn't make those types of coaching decisions if you weren't just sort of flying by the seat of your pants. But anyway, let's move on to the running back position. Before I get too deep, I can spend 20 minutes talking about that. But no Devontae Freeman once again tonight, but he was held out sort of at the last second. But Tevin Coleman looked really sharp, made two really strong runs coming off the heels of that big play to Hooper in the first series. We saw Ito Smith get a couple of reps with the starting offensive line and wound up with like two carries for 4 yards, so it didn't really make a big difference. But, you know, we saw a little bit of the summer of Ito that we've been hyping up, or at least I've been hyping up for a couple of months now. He did get 13 carries over the course of this game, as well as one target in the passing game. He did catch it, but on a wheel route. It was a really good catch, but he didn't keep his feet in bounds. So it was nice to sort of see him get going, and hopefully maybe next week he can do a little bit more against the Jaguars. I doubt it. We can't block the Chiefs' second unit defensive line. I don't know if we're going to be able to block the Jaguars' second unit defensive line, because I think Marcel Darius is on that second unit. Taven Bryan's on that second unit. So Dante Fowler, among other guys. So we'll see how that goes. As far as the other running backs, Justin Crawford, Malik Williams didn't see a ton of work in the second half. They played, but they just didn't get the ball a whole lot. McGee had that drop that was ruled a fumble at the end of the game that sort of ended the game. I thought that was the wrong call by the officials, but I think they were probably ready to go home like the rest of us. And so the one thing I do want to watch when I rewatch the game today, as you guys are listening to this, is I do want to see key in on Ito's pass protection to see how that held up. Let's talk about the fullback position. We saw it was weird because the Falcons put Luke McNitt out there for the first snap, so he technically got the start, but I don't recall seeing him after that point. Maybe he got some work in the second half that I just missed. But it seemed like Ricky Ortiz got the bulk of the work, certainly in the first half. I thought he played pretty well. He was consistently hitting his assignment. He was and locating the guy that he was supposed to block, which is what I mean when I say hit his assignments. I thought he did that both in pass protection and as a lead blocker in the run game. He wasn't necessarily nailing his blocks in the way that you like want him to when he's leading the running back up the middle. He's clearing that run lane. But, you know, hitting his assignment's a good start. That's basically how Patrick DeMarco started when he was in Atlanta back in, like, 2013, 2014. He wasn't this pile-clearing, you know, lane-clearing fullback. Long-time listeners may recall we had Obi Mahaley on this podcast many moons ago, back in, I think, 2014, talking about DeMarco and sort of why he wasn't this great fullback, and then the very next year he was a Pro Bowler. So I won't say that Ortiz has locked up the starting job quite yet, but it certainly would be an upset at this point if he lost the job. It's definitely his to lose, and we'll see what happens over the next two games. It did seem like the Falcons were giving him the bulk of the reps, and I've discussed before on this podcast that, you know, that could have been an issue given how many limited reps, and you want to get those guys maximum reps to get them ready for week one. If that's Ricky Ortiz at this point, then, you know, feed him as many opportunities as possible. We'll come back in a minute to continue talking about this Falcons offense and which players stood out at each position group, but I do want to plug Locked On Fantasy Football with host Vinny Iyer. If you guys want to get geared up for your fantasy drafts and your fantasy leagues this year, go check out Vinny Iyer, Locked On Fantasy Football, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. All right, let's talk about the wide receivers. And, of course, we're going to talk about Calvin Ridley. He showed some very nice things, led the team with 3 catches for 49 yards, had a touchdown. He got a big 36-yard gain on a skinny post where he smoked David Amerson. Then he got a touchdown sort of settling in underneath on a curl route against zone. When we had Matt Harmon on, currently with Yahoo Sports, formerly of NFL.com, on the podcast following the draft after the selection of Ridley, he noted that Ridley sort of had his highest success rate that he has charted going against zone coverage for a college receiver, and we saw that on that touchdown play. The one negative I mentioned, if you guys listened to the scouting report back in May of Ridley, was that he's not a particularly physical guy and sort of in traffic can sort of get out-muscled a couple of times. I think we saw a little bit of that, hints of that, in tonight's game. So I think we saw some good and bad. There was a play where Amundson snagged an interception in front of him on a fade route from Schaub. But unfortunately, or fortunately for the Falcons, unfortunately for the Chiefs, Anderson didn't keep his feet in bounds, and so it was ruled incomplete. So I think we saw the good and bad with Ridley tonight, but I think certainly the good outweighed the bad. He also looked good in the return game. Hall had a couple of nice catches. Russell Gage made a good catch on the comeback. Justin Hardy dropped the pass, but had a couple other catches. Reggie Davis made a nice couple of pair of grabs on some shallow crossers. We didn't see much of the deeper backups, guys like Devin Gray and Christian Blake and Dontez Byrd. I think a lot of that's owed to sort of how inefficient Binkert was when he was in the game, and he sort of Binkert's play overlapped a little bit with Marvin Hall in that second half, and it seemed like several plays that Binkert was locked in on sort of Hall and trying to force him balls, and it led to other guys not necessarily being targeted to the degree that they could have been, maybe, potentially. But again, that's judging purely off of watching it on television. Maybe the All-22 would say something differently, but I will not be able to see the All-22 for preseason. So, tight end position, Hooper looked really solid on the opening series on a pair of catches, including that 29-yarder that we mentioned earlier where Matt Ryan did his thing, as well as a three-yard score in which the Falcons ran a play-action rollout, and Hooper hurdled the defender into the end zone. I like that tight end rollout, that play-action tight end rollout, whether you run it backside or front side. To me, it's consistently, in my observation of watching football for like 20-plus years, is consistently the most effective red zone play. I'm sure it doesn't bat 1,000, but I think it bats way more than anything else that you could do in the red zone other than just a simple run up the middle from inside the 1 or 2 yard line. But what was notable, I did notice about the tight end position, was that Logan Paulson got the start at the position. And I think that's interesting because that's basically what the Falcons have done with Levine Toilolo versus Hooper the last couple of years. If you look back over the last 2 years, technically Toilolo has started 23 games while Hooper has only started 11. Even though, you know, using air quotes, Hooper is the starter, but Toilolo is actually technically out there for the first snap because the Falcons like to present run personnel to sort of dictate, you know, their whole play-action-based offense and all that type of stuff. So that was notable to me because basically with the Falcons' usage of Paulson in that role, it seems like they sort of are already penciling him into the Toilolo role, which is what we thought when we signed him, but we thought maybe Saubert could push him. Saubert didn't really get any action with the starters, from what I can tell. And so, you know, it seems like that job is pretty much locked up, but maybe something happens in his third preseason game. But it does seem like maybe Paulson will start week one as that number two tight end. But we'll see. Looking at the offensive line, Sam Brailo made his debut at left tackle working with the second string. I thought notably on that second string unit, Jamil Douglas was working at center. Garland kicked over to left guard. We saw Matt Gano playing ahead of Austin Pestor at that right tackle for the second string. You know, Schweitzer was the right guard because Fusco got the start at right guard with the first string unit. I thought Fusco made some nice blocks in the opening series. There was one in particular on one of the Coleman runs that he did a really good job opening a lane for him. I thought Schweitzer made some nice blocks on subsequent series when Ito Smith was running behind him. And one of the things I'll definitely try to pay attention to when I rewatch the game is looking closely at both of those guys and seeing maybe if one of them played a little bit better. And that'll be something we can discuss on Monday. And looking at how the offensive tackles were used tonight, it strongly hints to what I was talking about earlier this week when talking about sort of how the Falcons roster might land at the offensive line. And that if the Falcons are going to keep two offensive tackle, it'll likely be one veteran, which seemingly might be Sam Brailo at this point, and one of the young guys, which seemingly based off of his performances so far, would be Matt Gano. Watching this game live, I wasn't overly impressed with what Sam Brailo did, but I'll definitely rewatch and you know, before I come to any firm conclusions on that. Harlow continued to get some work with the third string at right guard. I thought he had some positive moments, some less than positive moments. So that'll be something else that I will rewatch as well. So we'll wrap things up with the defense in just a bit. But I do want to plug Locked On NFL Podcast with host Matt Williamson. Monday, you get a new local expert every Monday. Wednesday, you get Pro Football Focus's Mike Renner. And Thursday, you get ESPN's Mike Sando. Every single week on the Locked On NFL Podcast with host Matt Williamson. Your team every day. All right, defensive line. I didn't notice much from the starting defensive line in the early going, particularly when looking at the edge rushers like Tack and Vic. I didn't really see much from those guys, but maybe I'll catch something on the rewatch. I thought Grady Jarrett flashed a couple of times. I thought Sanat flashed a couple of times. I thought later in the game, Garrison Smith and John Cunningham flashed a couple of times. I'll definitely rewatch, but nobody else in terms of the front really stood out to me. I thought the pass rush was pretty lackluster for most of the game. Just not a lot of heat on the quarterback. And like the one time I can really recall Mahomes feeling any pressure in the first half, he delivered like a 70-yard pass to Tyreek Hill in a touchdown. You know, it was interesting to me late in the game because he had guys like Cunningham and JT Jones and Anthony Wimbush, who are, I think, are pretty talented guys going up against, you know, the Chiefs' third string offensive line. And the fact that they weren't really creating pressure was not particularly promising to me. So that's going to be another thing that I'll key on when I rewatch the game as well. At the linebacker position, Deion Jones was a late scratch. He suffered a strain, no big deal. Basically, the word was that if this was a regular season game, he would have played. But because it's not, they didn't play him. And it was interesting to see Duke Riley basically call the defense in his stead at middle linebacker, working with the starters through the first half. I thought he showed improvement this week. I think his tackling was significantly better. I think he was very consistent there. I think the instincts, you know, and I'll rewatch to confirm this. I don't think the instincts were always there on a couple of plays. And he looked a little bit hesitant and maybe a step behind in terms of his reads. But that is a little bit more tolerable than the poor tackling, I think, because he's a young linebacker. And as I've said a number of times on this podcast over the last 2 years, and certainly in recent shows, it's not as if Deion Jones and Devondre Campbell were out there looking like Mike Singletary or Derek Brooks in the early going in their careers, even going into last year, late into last year, and arguably still going into this year. Not to say that those, you know, I've said it 1,000 times that Campbell doesn't have great instincts, but I think Deion Jones has good instincts, but it's not as if, like a lot of it early on Deion Jones' career was him being just super, super fast. And so he could react late and still make plays because he's just so fast. Olakun got the start at weak side linebacker. I thought he was okay. I didn't think he seemed as fast or as rangy as he did a week ago, but I'll pay more attention to that in the rewatch. I thought Jonathan Celestin looked good. He got increased reps with the third string defense, led the team with 12 tackles. He really was the only guy that was consistently making tackles in the second half. A lot of missed tackles in the second half. I'm sure that's going to be a point of emphasis for the Falcons coaching staff this week with some of these guys, particularly, you know, maybe not all these guys are going to get a ton of work next week against the Jaguars, but certainly in the fourth preseason game, it's going to be, you know, on these guys to really do a better job tackling. The cornerback position, it wasn't a great night for the cornerbacks, particularly after you got past the starters. You know, Kelsey beat Trufant on the third down, and some people made a big deal about that on Twitter, especially after Alford wound up breaking up a slant to Kelsey in the end zone. I still find it so weird that, you know, you're in the minority of Falcon fans if you think both Trufant and Alford are good. And so many fans are vocal about how much they dislike one or the other. I find that so weird to me. But, you know, fan's gonna fan, I guess. I thought Brian Poole looked really good, very active in the run game, you know, going out there hitting guys like a safety, you know, which we knew that he does. He's done that consistently over the last, what, are we at year three now? Yeah, so the last 2+ years. You know, it was interesting to me that I didn't notice Oliver out there until the second half, so he didn't really get any opportunities to go against the Chiefs' first-string offense that played the entire first half. It looked like it was Bleedy Ray and Justin Bethel sort of as the second team corners this week. Oliver did not perform well in the third quarter. There was, I think, if it wasn't the opening series of the third quarter, but maybe the second series of the third quarter, he struggled on a bunch of plays. He got beat twice on a go right. He missed a tackle. The two go routes, one of them was a touchdown where he totally whiffed on a jam. I'm not going to be overly critical of Oliver, though. I think if you've been listening to this podcast for the last 3 months, you know I haven't been huge on setting these super high expectations for him. And so, you know, the fact that he's looking like a rookie is like, yeah, that's what we should have all been thinking instead of talking about how he was going to be this monster for the Falcons defense this year. Like, let's wait and see what these guys actually look like on the field before we get too far on the hype train and, you know, the thing jumps off the tracks. So, you know, judging by tonight's action, the competition for the third cornerback is just not close between Poole and Oliver. So we'll see if that changes in the next two games, but I'm not necessarily expecting it to. Bleedy Ray had a nice breakup in the end zone that was almost picked off. Justin Bethel got beat on that. He was technically in coverage on that Hill touchdown, but he played it expecting safety help because the Falcons were playing cover two. They ran an over route to Hill, and Tyson Graham was really not in position at all. I don't know what Tyson Graham was thinking on that play. It's like, it's Tyreek Hill, dude. Like, he's fast. You have to react to this over route. I guess he just didn't see it. Maybe his eyes are in the backfield or something. He just did not know what he was supposed to be doing. And that's what happens when you play a box safety deep. So, you know, it happens. I think with the other cornerbacks, I thought Deontay Burton did some nice things late in the game. And it makes me feel like he's in a position to potentially spend another year on the practice squad, you know, when it's all said and done. But we'll see how he performs in these next two games. You know, Ryan Neal, the newest Falcon that the Falcons picked up this past week, you know, he popped to me, flashed to me a couple of times. He really impressed me in terms of run support. There was a third and short late in the game where he did a great job coming downhill and making the tackle along the edge. So I'm eager to see if he can do more over the next two games, if he gets more opportunities. At the safety position, not much to report from the starters. The only thing that stood out to me was the fact that Keanu Neal got flagged for lowering his helmet on a penalty. When you look at the replay, he was pretty clear that he hit the guy with the shoulder. Maybe, you know, full speed. I didn't get to see it again, you know, because once you miss it full speed, you only get to see it replay. So maybe full speed, it may have been a little bit more iffy. And I guess this is a perfect opportunity for me to give my take on the new helmet penalty. I watched some of Thursday night's game, and particularly the Philadelphia Patriot game that happened on Thursday. They missed a lot of calls in that game. And so it made me come to the realization that it's going to be a thing. Like, I refuse to be one of those people that's going to be constantly complaining about this rule or that rule and how it's ruining the game or anything like that. Long-time listeners know that I'm not a big believer in blaming officiating. My grandfather was a high school and college official back in Virginia when I grew up. And, you know, I think I feel like I'm one of the 4 or 5 human beings that walk this face of the earth that have empathy for officials. But I think this is going to be a thing. I think this is going to screw over some teams. My hope is that the refs do not call it as closely as they have done this preseason once we get to the regular season. Because I feel like, again, I'm not necessarily saying the Neal one was one, but definitely rewatching the Eagles-Patriots game, they missed some obvious ones where it was very clear that the guy was hitting the guy with his shoulder. And you calling it is because you didn't see it. And so you threw the flag because you're siding, you know, on the side of caution and because it's a point of emphasis this year. I'm hoping that doesn't linger into the regular season and that unless an official clearly says, no, he definitely, I am 100% certain he hit him with his head, they will not throw the flag. That's my hope. Knowing the NFL, that's not going to happen, so I'm not going to hold my breath on that. Generally, I'll give the officials the benefit of the doubt. That's why I'm not as up in arms about the kneel one, because, again, I didn't necessarily notice it live, whether it was easy to where whether it was obvious that it was with his shoulder, but certainly the replay said it was. So we'll see. I can't remember what podcast I was listening to, or maybe it was one of the Thursday broadcasts that said it, but someone basically said that they expect offense and scoring to be way up, certainly at the beginning of the year, as a result of all these missed calls that extend drives. And I think, at least based off of the games I've seen so far this week in the preseason, I think that's going to be true. So that's good news for Sark, I guess. He certainly has no excuses anymore for, you know, the officiating is going to be heavily on his side. No more excuses for Sark, I guess. Getting back to the positional breakdown, though, Kazee had a really great interception, made a great catch, leaping grab. It was a really bad throw by Mahomes. Like, it was not to take anything away from Kazee, but like, that was just a terrible throw, terrible decision by Mahomes. And, you know, he made a great catch to go up and get it. But yeah, that's an easy play to make for DeMonte Kazee. But hey, look, I'm not going to take anything away from Kazee. He's been playing great this summer, so that's good to see. And as I said earlier, tackling was very suspect for the deeper reserves. For the Branch missed a couple, Cedric Cooper missed a couple. Again, Tyson Graham got roasted on that Hill touchdown. That was like 97% his fault. Safety depth is not looking particularly promising, at least for anybody beyond the big four making the roster and or practice squad. You know, and that big four is Ricardo Allen, Neal, Kazee, and Ron Parker. So we'll see if that changes the next two games, but that's another thing I'm not going to necessarily hold my breath on. Wrapping things up with the special teams, no Matt Bryant. Again, I think he was another guy that the Falcons said would have played had it been a regular season game. It was interesting to me that the Falcons went for it twice on fourth and shorts in the first half at the Chiefs' 20 and 8 yard lines. And I thought that was kind of a jerk move to David Marvin. You know, you can't necessarily say, oh, they don't trust Marvin. Which is why they went for it on fourth downs, because they kicked two extra points with Marvin, and those are set at the 15-yard line. So you can't be like, oh, we trust you to make a 15-yard, a 33-yard kick, but we don't trust you to make a 38-yard kick. Like, that doesn't make any sense. So I certainly get the desire to want to go for it on fourth and shorts to sort of evaluate and test your first and second string offenses. So I don't necessarily blame the coaching staff there. But, I think they probably sat there and said, oh, yeah, we'll go for it in these fourth downs, and Marvin will have some opportunities in the second half to kick some field goals. But, again, I think this is just going back to what I was talking about with the quarterback position and sort of talking about sort of why I don't put much stock in the preseason as far as it's sort of predictive of the regular season or being a good litmus test for how good a team is because of things like this, because it's very clear in those types of situations, particularly with how the Falcons handled their kicking situation, that they're really flying by the seat of their pants. And so you're not really seeing like great coaching in these instances. So that's one of the reasons why I don't put too much stock in the preseason. But, you know, I'll let everybody else get hyped about the Falcons, you know, upcoming regular season. Again, I'm not sitting here saying that you shouldn't be. I'm just saying, like, don't use this game as a reason. That's all I'm saying. Going back to the return game, as I said earlier, Ridley did well on the opening kickoff. I think it was like 34-yard return or something like that. After that, you didn't get much. You know, Ito Smith muffed two kicks. Marvin Hall muffed one. They both wound up recovering the ball. But, having unsure hands is probably the quickest way to not winning that job. In at least in Keith Armstrong's locker room, you know, you're not good enough to be a jerk, as he used more colorful terms than that, but I'll use jerk. I personally would love it if the Falcons use Ridley on kickoffs. I mean, based off of what we've seen so far, like, why wouldn't you? But I don't think they have the guts, as it were, to use it, to use him in that way. I think the idea that it unnecessarily exposes him to injury risk is kind of made up. I don't think his increased injury risk is significant at all. I think if he was a starting wide receiver, he would be much more exposed to injury risk than he would by the 25 extra times he has to return a kick this year. So you're 25 to 30 times. I think Robert said, 38 kickoff returns last year. So 25 to 40 extra touches that he gets this year. So, you know, I mean, maybe the new kickoff rules increases the amount of returns, but I don't know. I question that still, particularly when you play in the Georgia Dome when pretty much every kickoff is a touchback. I think if I was guessing what the Falcons want, they want somebody else to take this job so they don't have to give it to Ridley. So I think any and everybody will have multiple opportunities over the next two games to sort of steal this job. Unfortunately, we did not get to see Reggie Davis, who, if you listened to the preview episode yesterday, I was hopeful would get an opportunity because I do think he has a lot of skill as a return specialist. Maybe he gets an opportunity next week. If he doesn't, then I think that pretty much ends any chances of him making the roster. But we'll see how that goes, because I feel like the only way he's going to unseat Marvin Hall at this point is if he wins that kick return job. But yeah, we got more kickoffs this week as well, so I'll have an opportunity on Pawn Rewatch to sort of evaluate the coverage units a little bit. A couple of breakdowns, though, on punt returns at least. So I'll definitely key in on that. And, you know, we'll be back on Monday to talk a little bit more about some of these position battles and taking a deeper look at the trenches and some of the other guys that I outlined earlier that I wanted to take a deeper look on. I might even throw out like a tentative 10-man practice squad prediction based off of who's performed well over these first two games. The last little tidbit I'll leave you guys off with, listening or watching Dan Quinn's post-game press conference. I thought it was notable that, you know, there was a couple of questions about sort of Sark's positioning on the sideline. I know this was a thing early last year where some people were blaming the offensive struggles on the fact that Sark was up in the booth rather than on the sideline, and that he's more comfortable on the sideline. And so far in the preseason, he's been on the sideline. And it sounds like the Falcons are going to probably go with him on the sideline moving forward with Greg Knapp up in the booth. And, you know, while I didn't necessarily put too much stock in the whole notion that whether he's in the booth or the sideline is the reason why the Falcons offense is struggling, I certainly not to dismiss it and say it has no impact on things. I'm sure it does. I just didn't necessarily buy it to the degree that I think some people were trying to use it as a crutch to sort of blame why the Falcons offense wasn't working. You know how I feel about that. But if you're one of those people that were doing that, and you're also one of those people that also thinks Greg Knapp's presence is going to be this huge, huge boon for Sark's play calling, then at least this game gives you some ammunition for that take. Again, not necessarily a take I agree with, but hey, you know, can't win them all, I guess. So that's something to think about. But, yeah, guys, appreciate you guys tuning in on this Saturday. Relax and come back Monday, and we'll talk more about this Chiefs game as well as sort of some of the position battles and maybe how the roster is shaping. As I have discussed on this podcast over the last week, phase one of the preseason is over, and so we can talk a little bit more with a little bit more conviction about the evaluation of the 90 players all fighting for 53 jobs on this team. Fortunately, the Falcons have made it through so far pretty healthy. Didn't hear of any injuries in tonight's action. So we'll move on to phase two, which is the all-important dress rehearsal game. That'll be something that we'll talk quite a bit about later this week. And in the meantime, if you want to share your thoughts on this game or anything else, you can tweet at me. I'm at FalFans. If it's podcast-related, just go ahead and send it to the show's Twitter account. That's Locked On Falcons. If you prefer Facebook, that's Locked On Falcons. Give us a like while you're there. Email address is lockedonfalcons@mail.com, and you can leave a comment at lockedonfalcons.com or falfans.com, where the show is posted daily. So, until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.